Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. Two for one, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sun Guy Nation, welcome to the show today here on another Friday afternoon. We got a great guest with us, but really quick, if you are looking for some wrestling to attend in the next couple days, tonight, WCWO in Indianapolis, Indiana, like always, PWR in Klein, Iowa, Big Time Wrestling in Newark, California, RMP in Denver, Colorado, APW in Royston, Georgia, NCW in Dedham, Massachusetts, the AIWF in Boonville, Mississippi, and RCW happening in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Tomorrow night, Wrestle Club happening in Boise, Idaho, IPW in Spokane, Washington, Lucha Volcanica in our neck of the woods in Seattle, Washington tomorrow, CCW in Coral Springs, Florida, GPW in Tunnel Hill, Georgia, Future Talent of Wrestling in Spencer, Indiana, IWX in Memphis, Indiana, CTW in Linwood, Illinois, WCCW in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, LPW in Clinton, Massachusetts, LAW in New York City, New York, XWA in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Off the Chain Wrestling in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia tomorrow. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest onto the show. He is Mr. Chuck Coates. Mr. Coates, welcome to the show.
Well, it's glad to be here. I appreciate the invite, and I enjoy talking about wrestling, and I've got some good stories for you tonight.
Oh, no doubt about that. And normally I would ask the first question we usually do to a first-time guest, how did you get your start in wrestling? But a lot of the listeners today know that you've had some health problems over the last few years, or has been a few shows to help you out and try to raise awareness and so forth. So I want to start off today asking how you're doing health-wise at this point.
Well, by the grace of God, I'm still here. I've been, over the past 10 years, in a battle with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a type of cancer of the lymph nodes, in 2006, 2012, and 2016. So we fought it three times. We've been in remission in between each fight. But like I said, I'm in remission now, and thank the good Lord I'm still here. So thanks for asking. But I'm considering everything I've been through, I'm doing quite well.
That's great news to hear. Now, we will also ask you the normal first-timers question as well. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
My story is a little bit, it's rather unique. It's not your traditional go to wrestling school and learn how to wrestle and get you know, whatever bookings you can. I started, as a kid, I grew up watching with my dad, and I ended up going to North Carolina State University, and they had the Dorton Arena in Raleigh was our local the area we went to go watch wrestling on Tuesday nights. This is back in 1985. And lo and behold, I met a guy named Mike Howell, and he went to NC State as well, and we both had a passion for the business. We were big marks, and we just loved this is down in North Carolina, so our big stars, the people we got to see all the time, was Dusty and Ric Flair you know, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, the Andersons, that group, Jim Crockett Promotions. So we'd go every Tuesday once a month. We'd save our money, and I think ringside tickets were like $6 back then. And it was something we wanted to do. And so one day we decided, let's learn how to do this stuff. So we were kind of backyarders, I guess you could say. And lo and behold, we got a grant, a student loan from the university dormitory we stayed in, and we built a wrestling ring. And the agreement was that the money raised would go back to the dorm to enhance the dorm and improve the parts of the dorm that's been had issues with as far as the building itself. And I would kind of compare it to intramurals somewhat, but it was a professional wrestling league we had on the campus, and we would get people charged, I don't know, $2-3 a ticket. They'd come in and watch us, and we weren't nowhere near trained or where we should have been. And it kind of started like that. And so we decided to get more serious about it, and so we left college and went to Nelson Royal in Mooresville, North Carolina. He trained some of I saw where you had Gene Ligon on the show last time, and he trained Gene, and I mean, you know, all those Crockett guys from the underneath guys from the 80s, and we got some training from Nelson. And then in 1989, we had our first call. Nelson called us, and they wanted to bring us up for TV, and the WWF at the time was, I was 23 years old, Mike was obviously 23, and we got our first chance to go do TV, so we were pretty excited about that, and that's where it took off. I mean, we did some indie stuff. We weren't really involved in indies as much as, you know, our passion was to make the big leagues and then hopefully get a break and then become a star like most of the kids are, you know, today. But it was a whole different animal back then. I mean, TVs were done. They did 3 weeks of TV tapings, so they were always ahead. You know, I could – you know, back then you had VCRs, and I'm telling my age here, but you know, you had time to tape it because you knew, and you know, my match with say Andre the Giant and Haku's coming up next week because it was all taped. It was nothing live. So we did that quite a bit in 1989, and then in 1991 Bobby Fulton of the Fantastics, we crossed paths, and he needed a Russian. And so he put a hood on me, and I was one of the Russian assassins. I guess I was number 5,000. But we did some of that with Ivan Koloff in the Russian chain matches, and we got good response from that. And so Bobby took me to TV. And then I started my WCW TVs, and that was in 91. I met Jody Hamilton, which was my booker. He brought in the TV guys, and then that took off. And in the meantime, I was doing my independent gimmick. Bobby gave me that too, the Mad Max character I did. You may have saw the pictures, and I've got some videos and stuff, but I did that. As you well know about the business, you know, a lot of times these guys doing, well, TVs back then, you're doing TVs when they call you, but you're doing your independent stuff on the weekends. You know, you just keep busy. It's kind of like the baseball teams, you know, they're AAA, AA, single A. You know, they're playing baseball trying to make it to the bigs. It's the same principle. So that started that, and then, you know, my career took off, and I was busy as I could be. I mean, with TV tapings, independent wrestling, and you know, every so often we'd have a tour overseas and stuff, and it was pretty neat. You know, we got a chance to experience a lot of good stuff through the wrestling business.
I mentioned, of course, doing the TVs for the WWF. You also did a lot for WCW. When you were getting television matches, were you still doing a full-time independent schedule in between TV taping appearances?
You know what I did? I got a job. I got a job. I had to have my baby. My son was born in 92. And so I was doing the independent stuff on Friday and Saturdays, sometimes Sundays. And the TV tapings were, I think, once every 3 weeks, and they'd bring us back in. And then I got a job in the printing industry to have me something to do steady so I could make a living and support my family. So in between all that, I would take my vacation time and my sick time. And sometimes, I remember at one time I got so busy with wrestling, I actually took a leave of absence. Because I, you know, my passion was to do this wrestling thing, and the owner, the company I worked for, he knew that, so he said, "Well, he gave me some time off to do my wrestling," and so it was my number one priority in the early '90s, and you know, like I said, I kept the regular job because I needed it for my family, but I, you know, if there was some wrestling to do, I had to be there. You know, I mean, it didn't really matter thankfully, the owner and I were good friends. I guess it was kind of favoritism because the owner and I were workout partners at the gym. So he kind of knew my passion for the business, and he let me kind of do as I pleased. I look back now and realize that not every company would do that, but they did. And so I got to kind of live my dream and still make a living. You know, wrestling paid back then. It was okay. You know, I wasn't by no means making a living full time, but I mean, we made it. You know, we shack up three, four, five of us to get together and drive up down the coast, the eastern part of the state, the eastern part of the United States, and, you know, split the gas money, split the hotel, whatever, and just go. I mean, it was like, you know, steady work. And it was just, you know, it was what we did. And then, you know, TV was like there too, you know, and that was on Monday and Tuesday. So that was good because there was no independent shows, you know, during the week. So that worked out good as well. And, you know, it just, I look back now and it's just kind of surreal, you know, it's like, wow, some of the guys I was in the ring with, it's amazing to even think about, you know, even though I was, well, you know, they called us job guys or whatever, enhancement talent, whatever the politically correct word is, we were paid to make the stars look good, and that's what we did, and I felt like we did a good job of that. You know, a lot of the stars today will tell you that the Gene Liggins and the George Souths and the David Isleys and the Barry Horowitz, and, you know, all the guys from yesteryear, they are one of the big reasons that they were, you know, drawing money because, you know, TV was the number one thing then. It was the biggest thing to get people to come to the house shows. You know, now it's totally different. But what they saw on television, you made them want to come see it live, you know, and that's what we did to try to keep those guys sharp so people would pay money to come see them at the local arenas or high schools or wherever they came.
One of the people that you did wrestle on television was arguably the most famous wrestler of all time, Andre the Giant. He was getting towards the end of his life at that point. He was not in the prime of his career anymore. But even so, what was it like getting in the ring with someone like Andre the Giant?
It was, the way they did then, they put a chalkboard. You know, we had to be there, I think, at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You checked in with my boss was Tony Garea and T.J. Strongbow. That's who I checked into. Let them know you was there, and you could go eat or go work out or whatever. But about 4 o'clock, they had a chalkboard, and they put it in front of the monitor, and they write down the TV who was going to wrestle who. And they were writing names and stuff. And, you know, back then, the top guys – during that time, Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig, and of course Hulk Hogan, of course Andre, I mean, the Macho Man was there, the Brother Love was doing his thing. I mean, this gives you an idea of the time frame of when I was doing TV. It's been a while. Ultimate Warrior was there, and they were at the top, the peak of their careers at the time, and actually they were really starting to get built, and they went on into years later, you know, we're just unbelievable superstars. But, you know, this is the time frame I'm giving you, painting a picture for you to give you an idea of what we're talking about. Dusty was there with the polka dots and Roddy Piper and all that. Anyway, they were writing the names on the chalkboard, and they got to mine, and they said Andre and Haku, which they put Andre with Haku because Andre, like you said, Andre's help was declining. He'd had back surgery, and I think he had really basically had a big toll on his performance and his body, and so they put him with Haku. Obviously, if you remember, he'd come in and do the finishes. He wouldn't do much of the stuff during the match. Haku would do the work, but they put his name, Andre and Haku, and then they draw the line over it. Says Tony, Paul Roma was my partner. Paul Roma, and they wrote the C down, C-H-U-C. I'm thinking, is there anybody else named Chuck around here? You know, and so they took my name, Chuck Coates, and I'm thinking, is this really going to happen? You know, because like you said, Andre, if you don't know anything about wrestling, you know who Andre the Giant is. I mean, you know, it's just I've watched the match. I'm going to be honest with you. I've probably watched the match 150 times. I mean, I just can't. I mean, it's like, this really happened. That's me. I've still got those boots and the tights I wore that night. And it's just kind of cool knowing they, you know, from the icon legend, if you will, standpoint, that you're in the ring with the best of the best and the most, you know, well-known wrestler in the, like you said, and possibly the history of wrestling business. And lo and behold, the next night, Mike wrestled him, my friend from college. And we both wrestled Andre back to back, and that was really neat, you know. And it was just amazing. The reality of the fact, even though he came in, did his headbutt, and did the elbow drop, I mean, simple as it was, it's still not many people have done that. You know, not many people can say that I was in the ring with Andre the Giant. And it's just like I said, it's really a neat thing to talk about now that I'm 49 years old now and been through a lot. You know, like I said, with my health and all, but my history of wrestling, it basically went 20 years. And that's probably the highest. There's quite a few more that I wrestled, but he was, like you said, the top of the charts as far as anybody asked my most memorable match. It would have to be that one.
Getting in the ring with Andre at that point in his career, were you concerned at all as far as his physical condition leading to something that could have put your well-being at risk, or was it well known that he was still safe to get in the ring with at that point?
Yeah, I didn't really, honestly, I didn't think about getting hurt. I knew he'd been doing it long enough, and even though he was a little more, I guess the word would be feeble, because he was struggling to, you know, get around, and he had some issues backstage where he had to literally, I mean, had a tub full of ice and he'd soak his feet and he would go. I mean, it took him, just you'd watch him and it was kind of sad because it was like you said, in his last couple of years. But anyways, I didn't really worry about it. I my adrenaline and my excitement was so high. I will tell you this, when you go, you know, you go over your match and backstage and Haku comes up, it was about, I don't know, 5:30. The show started at 7:30. I think it was 7:30. He says, "Brother, have you seen us wrestle?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I'm do this, you know, you're going to take the finish. Andre comes in, he'll get with you later." And you know, when he got with me 10 minutes before we went out, I was over there sweating bullets. And I said, "He hasn't even talked to me yet. And I'm getting ready. We're third match on the card." And he comes up behind me. He's going, "Where is he at?" And Haku said, "Here he is." And he says, "Oh, I give you headbutt, you go down." He said, "I give you headbutt, you don't go down. Don't go down." I said, "Yes, sir." You know, because that's when they did the kick. If you remember the finish, I don't know, but they did the kick. I took the bump, and then Andre did the elbow. That's all he said to me, you know. So I wasn't thinking much about him hurting me at the time. I was just more concerned, is he going to talk to me or not? Because I don't want to go out there and make the most well-known wrestler in the history of the business make look bad, you know, even though I had been watching television and seeing the kind of stuff they did. Pretty much knew what he was going to do, but just hearing him say it, it makes you feel a lot better.
One of the things that wasn't really thought of too much in that time frame, but in the last 10 years or so, it's become a very hot topic in professional wrestling, is the issue with concussions. When you were starting out, was there any real concern about receiving a concussion, and did you give it a little bit more thought as you went along in your career, as we learned more about concussions in the last several years?
That's a good question. I'll be honest with you. It didn't even cross my mind. Concussion wasn't even, you know, we're talking late 80s, mid 90s on into 2000. It wasn't really, if you hit your head, or you took a bad bump, or if you got whatever, you just thought, "Oh man, I got a knot on my neck." You know, I've had stitches in my head and I've had all kind of stuff, but never once did I think, I think I might have a concussion. I don't feel right. It's just something you just did, you know, you roll with it. I mean, unless it was something where you were down and out, you just kept on doing it. Now, I'm sure I've had a few that I don't know about, but it wasn't even discussed back then. I think in the past 10 years, like you said, football players have come forward and all that. But you know, that generation of wrestling, we didn't even consider I knew what it was. I was very much aware of what a concussion was, but it didn't even cross my mind that I may have one, or I didn't go in the ring thinking I can't do this because I might get a concussion. I just went in and performed the best that I could and the best of my ability, and then hopefully not get hurt. But, you know, we did have times when we did. And like I said, it wasn't one of the things we talked about back then, you know, like they do today.
Well, since you were fairly active on the independent level, obviously you came across a lot of different venues. Wrestling can pretty much be set up anywhere from a church basement to a minor arena to the biggest stadiums in the world. In your career, what would you say was the oddest venue where you had to perform?
When you say odd, you mean far as the most unique, I guess you could say?
the most unique place where a ring was set up and you had to go perform in it.
Okay, I've got a few of those. First thing that comes to mind is a local bar in Greensboro, North Carolina. The top rope was about 4 feet from the ceiling, so obviously there was no backdrops or hip tosses. I could touch the tiles on my tiptoes, and the ring fit in there, and people came to see it. So we wrestled there. We had to keep everything on the ground. The second thing, I've done matches in mobile home parking lots. let's see, I've done them in the middle of. I wrestled in the middle of a fairgrounds on top of manure, where the horses, the ring was actually set up on top of on top of manure, where they had the cows and horses shows and everything, and that was neat. And we were actually ribbing each other, trying to throw each other out of the ring to try to, you know. I mean, it wasn't like, I'm not saying like the whole floor was manure, but they didn't clean, put it this way, after the horse show, if you know what I mean. And it was straw and horse crap, if you will. And that was that. And then, let's see, I've actually been a part. Let's see, was I part of that? No, I was not. With the one night, a ring did not show up, and they wrestled on what I was told. They pulled out the collegiate or the high school wrestling mats and wrestled on them. And I was supposed to be on that show. Of course, I wasn't, so I guess I had heard about it. But as far as I go, that was pretty much. I can't think of anything else that was rather is a little different. Those three or four things were the most interesting, I guess, environments I wrestled in or on. but
we have a game we like to play on our show called Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some people that you likely have come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops into your mind to describe them would be the answer. Are you willing to play around a word association?
Sure.
All right, here we go. First name, Cue Ball Carmichael.
Tough.
Matt Hardy.
Intelligent.
Jim Ross.
Business.
Tim White.
I do not believe I know who that is.
Referee from the WWF.
Tim White?
Yes.
I can't answer that. I don't believe I've crossed paths with him. Okay. If I have, I do not. Okay.
All right. Haku.
Haku. Aggressive.
Brutus Beefcake.
Different.
Arn Anderson.
Focused.
Ric Flair.
Flamboyant.
And the last one, Al Snow.
Over. And these are the first words, I've been honest with you, that I thought about when you mentioned these names. Tim White. Is he the guy with the beard, heavy set?
Yes.
Okay, I do remember him. I apologize for that. I would say funny. He seemed to be a funny guy backstage.
At this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and QT has some questions also, so I'm going to pass things over to him.
Sure.
Well, thank you, Sunday. Hello, Mr. Coates.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Mr. Coates, I'd like to expand on Sign Guy's word association with four wrestling people, if I may. How about Brother Love?
And we're going to – Brother Love, as far as – let's see. First word is funny. I've already used funny, but he was a character.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll put down character. I'll write that down, okay. How about Vince McMahon?
Intimidating.
Oh, intimidating, okay. As only a billionaire can be.
Yeah. And I'm okay. Speaking from my experiences, so, you know, some people may think different, but he was very intimidating backstage.
Oh, okay, all right. How about Stephanie McMahon?
Nice.
Okay, nice. And the last one, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Deceiving.
Oh, deceiving, all right. Okay.
I would say, and what I mean by that is I would walk up and think this guy could kill me, but he wasn't a bad guy, if that makes any sense. His looks,
oh, sure.
Looks and his, yeah, looks doesn't describe the man, if you will.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Coates, I saw your Chinlock for Chuck promo HD, and I was amazed that on this card that will be held, I don't know if it has been held or it will be held, at Northern Durham High School in Durham, North Carolina, there is, or there was, a women's bout that features the tag team of Jamie Jameson and Casey Carlisle versus Amber O'Neill and Reba Sky. Is that going to be held pretty soon, or has it been held?
That was held after my second bout. It was held on January 15, 2013, in Northern High School. Was the place I attended high school, so it was kind of a sentimental homecoming for me. But the event was absolutely, it was flawless. It went off like a, it was kind of like, if you guys, I know you've heard of Omega Championship Wrestling here in the Carolinas, Matt and Jeff, it's kind of their baby. They started it back in the early 90s, and it was a rebirth of Omega, because when Jeff and Matt signed their contracts, Omega kind of got put to the side, their independent promotion. And the Chinlock for Chuck was kind of like the first night back, and ever since Omega's been going pretty strong, feeding off of that night, because so much happened and such good responses from the fans, and just you know, it was an amazing night. But like I said, it was 2 years ago, and seems like it was last week, because it was so much fun. And like I said, that was a benefit for me after my second bout with lymphoma.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that was more than 3.5 years ago. And what struck me about this promotion, the flyer about this match was Amber O'Neill's sunny disposition. She reminded me of Kofi Kingston. Yes. But Casey Carlisle, I'm not sure when Sign Guy started to know about this amazing woman's talent. I'm not sure if it was before 2013 or during that period, but both Sign Guy and myself have had a chance to see Casey Carlisle in action here in the Northwest. And Sign Guy has actually flown out and seen and refereed, most importantly, some of her matches on the East Coast.
She's an outstanding heel. She's what wrestling needs. I mean, that's the first night I met her, and I was very impressed with her work, the way she controls the crowd, the way she keeps the heat, and she does it like it was intended to be. She reminds me a lot. Remember Leilani Kai?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. She reminds me of a modern Leilani Kai, because Leilani had a way of just drawing, I mean, just being a heel and getting over. And she just has that. She has it. The it factor in wrestling is something you can't, you're not born with it. You either have it or you don't. Casey has it. And I enjoyed her work. I really did. I enjoyed watching that match that night.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, Chuck, I saw your WCW wrestling video when you went up against Lex Luger, and the announcer said that you were from our neck of the woods, Seattle, Washington. My question is, did this match take place on or about 1986 or 1987 when Seattle's tallest building, the Columbia Center, was being built?
It was not. This was an accident, a mess up. They had put our hometowns down, and the ring announcer read my hometown, read the wrong hometown. It was in that match was in Marietta, Georgia in 1991. So that Seattle, Washington was a complete mess up, and you know he just misread the information that I'd give him, and because. But that was that. That's the story on that. Because a lot of people have asked me, Seattle, I know you're from Seattle. I said, I'm not. It was just a mess up on the ring announcing. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Well, Mr. Coates, did you know that a 92-story building has been proposed for the city of Seattle, and it is being reviewed by the city planners?
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I was thinking if that announcer was right, and raised my eyebrow. I was wondering, I was going to ask you if you had seen the Columbia Center being built. That was a major question. Yes.
Yeah. It may have been a rib this whole time, all these years. I'm just kidding.
Well, Mr. Coates, if you freeze this match that you had with Lex Luger, at the 3 minute and 38 second mark, you can see that Luger has you in an arm bar and you are down on the mat with your head at, shall we say, your head was at the right foot of Lex Luger. One can't help but notice that the boot by your head that Luger is wearing is a whitish silver color combination, and it laces all the way up past his calf muscle. I estimate the total height of this boot at 1 foot 11 inches. Your right boot can clearly be seen having 12 crisscrosses of the white shoelace, and what reminded me of your boots is Dorothy's slippers in the movie Wizard of Oz. One of my questions is, did you pay a premium for these boots knowing that good ankle support and well-constructed arches are a good deterrent against injury? And after the match, did you Sharpie autograph Luger's boots, and did he sign your boots?
No, I wore ankle brace things inside of my boots. I didn't buy any special boots or anything. I just took care of myself with my personal. With tape and with little braces or whatever I used. But I still have those boots. They're the same boots I was in the ring with Andre the Giant with. So I kind of keep them and held on to those all these years kind of for that reason.
Wow. All right. Okay. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, you raked Luger's eyes for a third time at the 4 minute and 24 second mark, followed by a rake to his back at the 4:26 mark. My question is, prior to the match, had you heard information that Lex Luger did not have a very good health insurance plan that would only cover 50% of an eye exam and only 25% of the cost of a new pair of bifocals, and thus you were aiming at hurting him financially?
Actually, I don't even have any fingernails. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
They say get heat, so that's how I got the heat, I guess.
Oh, okay. All right, well, Chuck, Lex sealed the win with a power slam followed by a torture rack. Well, Mr. Coates, I was a big fan of the torture rack, and for my retirement match, against Pa Moonshine, who wrestles for Blue Collar Wrestling at the North Portland Eagles. I have publicly stated that I'm going to get him in an Appalachian torture rack. The problem is, I can only squat a standard 45-pound barbell with two bagels attached to both ends of the bar for a combined weight of 45 pounds, 3 ounces. Do you have any suggestions how I can be Luger-like and increase my torture rack capabilities?
It's all in the legs, man. You got to train those legs. You know, pick the guy up, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Now,
all right.
Holding him up there depends on his size. I don't know. I weighed 240 pounds then, and he held me up pretty good. So.
Oh, well, I didn't. I'm kind of relieved that Paul Moonshine doesn't weigh that much.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Well, Chuck, I also saw, and Sangai has, and you yourself have commented on your tag team with Paul Roma against Andre the Giant and Haku. The announcer said that Andre's and Haku's combined weight was 790 pounds. Is this the heaviest team you faced by around a surplus of 120 pounds?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Okay.
I don't know what our combined weight was, but it was probably, I don't know, 400, 450.
Oh, all right.
Me and Paul, they outweighed us pretty good.
Yes. Well, Mr. Coates, after Andre headbutted you at the 408 mark and Haiku delivered his kick to the jaw, Andre gave you, like you mentioned, that elbow drop to seal the victory. Now, I was going to ask at this point of the career if Andre was near 500 pounds, and we have determined that he was. My question is, what do you think the effect would have been had you received this elbow drop when Andre was near 460 pounds, as he was when he wrestled Hulk Hogan on August 9th, 1980, in what was billed as Showdown at the Shea? What if he was like some 80 pounds lighter?
As far as the impact or?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it would have been, he was very easy on the elbow. He didn't, if you noticed, he didn't bring any weight on top of me personally. He tried to keep it off. But I think in that case, it probably would have been a little bit stiffer, if you will, because he was really kind of late. I mean, he did the elbow drop, but he could tell how fragile he seemed, and you know, he just didn't seem as aggressive in the latter part of his career, and that's obviously why, because he was having trouble with his health.
Right, all that weight had a huge impact on his leg joints. Yes,
yeah.
Joints of his and his feet. Okay, all right. Well, Chuck, I also saw your YouTube video Chin Lock for Chuck. My question is, what is or was the name of the Dachshund dog that you have on your right shoulder, the Dachshund?
Let's see which one that is. It had
no,
to be right. I believe the photo you're talking about, was it in a video or was it a photo?
It was a photo.
Yeah, that's Rascal. That's my buddy. He's my 6-year-old Winnie dog.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the reason his name is Rascal, because he is a rascal.
Oh, okay. All right. Very beautiful dog, by the way. Yes.
Well, thank you.
Well, Chuck, in this video, at the 4:15 mark, you are standing next to a golf cart, and in your hand, you're holding a driver. My question is, are you a better long-distance driver than you are at the short iron game? And is the sand wedge your favorite club?
Sand wedge is my favorite club. Driver is not, because I spent a lot of time looking for my ball.
Oh, okay. Now, what are some of the wrestlers you have faced that you have also golfed with?
Oh, my goodness. Most indie guys, Mike, my college roommate, my brother David. He wrestled for a short time in the 90s. Let's see. Nobody that's really, I don't think I've played golf with anybody. Oh, Tracy Smothers. I did play with Tracy Smothers. And that was back when we were on the tour in 1999 on an overseas tour. Ricky Nelson played golf with him from Jim Crockett Promotions. David Isley, I played with him. Yeah, that's all I can think of off the top of my head.
It's amazing to think if Andre the Giant ever golfed, he'd have to have a driver that measured about 5 feet in length. Pretty mind-boggling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. He's an amazing, amazing person.
Do you see a future where golf and wrestling are combined?
Oh, no. I don't think so. I can see a future.
Oh, okay.
I can see a future today where gymnastics and wrestling are combined.
Oh, well, that's a unique combination. Yes,
because I think a lot of the wrestlers today would be great gymnasts. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay. Well, I have seen Bam Bam Bigelow do a cartwheel in the ring. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Chris Adams did them too, really.
What's that?
I think Chris Adams did cartwheels too.
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, now, speaking of golf, were you a big fan of Adam Sandler's golf comedy-themed movie, Happy Gilmore?
Oh, yeah, it was a great movie. It's funny. I haven't seen it in about 7 or 8 years, but it was funny.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Chuck, in this movie, Adam faces a very tough Bob Barker on a fight on the golf course. And Adam comes out of this fight worse for wear and tear. My question is, how would you have fared on a golf course fight with Bob Barker?
It would depend on if he had his models with him or not.
Oh,
models. Yeah. By himself, I could handle him, no doubt. But if you brought the models from the 80s, I don't know. I probably wouldn't do too well.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, very good. All right, well, Mr. Coates, I also saw your YouTube video, WCW TV debut, Steve Austin versus Coates, 6-1-91. In this match, Steve Austin's valet, Vivacious Veronica, hits you with her shoe at approximately the 3:23 mark. My question is, should Veronica have used an odor-absorbing Dr. Scholl's charcoal insole in her shoe?
No, absolutely not. But she should have took the thorns out of the rose she hit me with.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yes,
the rose had every thorn in it, and it hurt. That's why I sold it. It was a shoot. Oh, what a day.
Oh, my. Okay, so I'm going to officially put down in my logbook that the rose hurt more than the shoe. Okay, very good.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, Mr. Coates, did you ever have a chance to take a road trip with Bobby the Brain Heenan?
No, I did not.
Well, Mr. Coates, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners the name of the dorm where you held some of your intramural wrestling matches at North Carolina State?
The name of the dorm was Turlington. It's the oldest dorm on campus. It was built, I can't remember when, but back in the early 1900s. It's old. I mean, really old. And it still stands today, as far as I know.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
But it's named Turlington Dormitory.
All right. Do you recall who the basketball coach was at the time at North Carolina State? And did he stop by your dorm to see these intramural matches?
He did not stop by, but the basketball coach was one of my heroes, Jimmy Valvano, who ended up being, you know, had cancer, and he left the V Foundation for us to go be able to use the money they raised to help fight cancer, and it's helped me tremendously. But Jimmy Valvano was one of my heroes, and I never recall him, coming to watch us wrestle. I know one of the basketball players did one night. I do remember that.
Oh, how tall was he?
6'10", Brian D'Amico.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
6'10", all right. All right, well, Mr. Coates, if Jimmy Valvano came out of retirement, how do you think he could fare against Casey Carlisle?
Well, Jimmy's best as hard, he's gone now, but if he were still here, I don't think he would do too good.
Oh, okay. All right. Will, did you ever have a chance to wrestle King Kong Bundy?
I did not. I never have crossed paths with him.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you did you have a chance to see his two appearances on the sitcom Married with Children?
I did. I think I saw one. Yeah, I do remember seeing him on that. One of the shows, yeah.
Yes, he tried to rip the stinger off Bud Bundy when he was dressed as a bumblebee.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, did you ever have a chance to meet women's wrestler Mae Young or Gladys Killam Gillum?
I was backstage with Mae. I never spoke to her, but I did see her backstage a couple of times back in early 2000s, but we never actually talked.
Was that Gladys Killam Gillum or Mae Young?
Mae Young.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Terminal listeners how old your son is, and does he also want to become a wrestler?
He's 24. He just turned 24 Wednesday. He has had no desire whatsoever to wrestle, even though he grew up in the ring. He's played with a lot of the other kids, but he grew up around it every week. If I was there, he was there, because I raised him by myself, and he never did show interest in wanting to do it. So I told him, if you want to do it, I'll support you. If you don't, that's fine too. But he's 24 now, and he never wanted to get into it.
Oh, okay. All right. What were the three most important nuggets of wisdom that you learned in the ring that you passed on to your son?
Three nuggets of wisdom.
Yes. You can narrow it down to two.
Well, first thing would be always know your surroundings, know who's around you, know who's behind you, beside you. Wrestling business increases your reflexes, and you just have a knack somewhat for seeing or feeling some presence of somebody. Always be aware of your surroundings would be one. And two, if somebody wants to fight you, don't fight them, wrestle them. If you know how to wrestle, you can take them, unless they're just a boxer or something outrageous. But regular street fight, if he was going to go, I'd tell him, wrestle. I would teach him. So I would wrestle a guy rather than fight a guy. I think it'd be more effective. I did teach him that as a young boy, because you never know. Somebody's going to jump on you or not, especially today. And so I tried to keep him prepared. So that's the two things that I can think of. Be aware of your surroundings, and don't fight, wrestle.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Okay. How do you think your career would have been affected had you had YouTube and the internet at the start of your career?
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
I would love to have had cell phones back then with cameras, because I'd have some awesome pictures. You can't carry a camera around backstage. It's unprofessional. But if you got your phone, everybody has a phone. I could have had some awesome memories and photos. But anyway, as far as the YouTube and the social media, I think it would have been better for me on the independent circuit. Today you can advertise. I know the first thing on top of the hour, the show, he plugged, I don't know how many independent shows coming up. And, we didn't have that then. Hung posters up, and you buy a radio ad or sometimes a TV slot. But if we had social media today, I think it would be a huge benefit with all the technology, YouTubes, Facebook, it would have been a huge advantage to let people know what town you're going to be in. Like I said, we did it the old school way, hanging posters and word of mouth and radio ads. That's all we had, because we didn't have a TV spot. Well, I worked for some indie promotions that had TV slots, but it was local TV, and it was good and all, but it would be a lot more effective today if we had the social media that we have today, if we had it back then.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And I'll have one last question before I pass it back to Sign Guy. Are you aware of Farmer's Market in Seattle?
No, just the one in Raleigh.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, to give you a brief thing, you can also go online and look up Farmer's Market. It is in downtown Seattle near the waterfront, and they are known for selling their seafood. And a lot of times when Seattle is playing on Monday Night Football, they will pan down to Farmer's Market and see people behind the counter that sell the seafood throwing salmon to be put on ice. They'll actually see a Chinook salmon traveling through the air, and the counter person will grab this Chinook salmon and quickly put it on ice. It's kind of a show for the tourists. My question is, or my observation, I'd pay big money to see you hit Haku with a Chinook salmon. Yes.
And about 25 seconds later, I'd be laying in the casket.
Oh, my. Yes, he was a tough person.
They say he was the actual toughest guy in the wrestling business. They say he was the only man that Andre feared.
Now, toughest, how about Paul Orndorff?
Yeah, I never knew much about it. I never met him, but I heard some stories about him, but Andre was, I think that's one of the reasons they put them together, because that was the only man, I was told that was the only man that he feared was Haku, so they put them together, and that's where the Colossal connection came from. And I'm going by word of mouth. I don't know that for sure. It's just a few different people that don't know each other have told me the same thing, so it kind of makes sense.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, and real quickly, this just popped in my mind. Have you ever met a wrestler, Madman Pondo?
I have not.
Okay.
I know I've got a real good friend who wrestled him, Beastmaster Rick Link. They've had some crazy matches. They were doing barbed wire stuff back before WWE was doing it.
Well, one can only have a crazy match when Madman Pondo is involved. All right. Well, back to you, Sunday. Thank you, Mr. Coates. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, QT.
Well, Mr. Coates, I know you were active into the 2000s. Having started your career in the 80s, what would you say was the biggest change in the wrestling business from your standpoint, from the time you broke in until the time you decided to call it a career?
I would say the biggest change would probably be even from NWA. I think the biggest change while I was when the NWA was bought out by Ted Turner, and when WCW was born, the wrestling business, it started changing. And then you had the, I know Dusty Rhodes spoke about it on his, back in the day when he was being interviewed on some of his shoot interviews, you had the closed circuit television for Starcade, all that. That was all kind of new at the time. But when WCW came along and it became a, worldwide, you're seeing everything everywhere from it's not what it was like Jim Crockett Promotions in the regions and the old territories, and WCW come, and then they started having the clashes, and they had the it just all led up to the NWO, then Vince takes over, and then it completely landscape changes altogether. But I think when competition ended is a big change, but when WCW took over, the NWA is number one. Number two is when Vince bought out WCW, and the competition factor was out. You know, one of the best things that ever happened was the Monday Night Wars. I mean, the ratings were out of the roof. You know, people couldn't watch both at one time. I mean, you could, but it was just that ratings thing. By that time, I was still wrestling, but I wasn't doing any TVs during the Scott Hall, Kevin Nash era. I had,
I had stopped doing TVs by then. So, well, I take that back. I did a few for WWE in the 2000s. But that would be my observation. NWA going, being bought out, and WCW then being bought out. So WCW takes NWA, then the WWE takes WCW. And then the 90s was a huge, huge change, transition in the wrestling business. And I was there for the first part of it when the NWA, well, it's still here. NWA is still here, but as far as the, when WCW took over the reins there, and it kind of left everything. It just, I don't know, kind of became part of the back burner, if you will. You know, like I said, the NWA is still going strong. It's just not, they don't have all the TVs, all the stuff they used to have to promote. It's just not the same anymore. And that's what I say. That's my answer. Yeah.
You mentioned the NWA is still going strong, and there's several strong affiliates that are doing very good business right now. We just crowned a brand new NWA World Heavyweight Champion last week in Tim Storm. Do you follow much about the current NWA, and do you have an opinion of what they're doing right now?
I'll be honest with you, I did for quite some time. When I say going strong, I'm more or less saying it's still there. It's not, you know, even though they don't have the notoriety that the WWE has, but they I watched it. I kept up with it with it was Carino was champion and Adam Pearce, Cahagas, is that his name? Cahagas. Champion, and I don't know, I kind of lost, to be honest with you, when I got sick, I kind of lost touch with wrestling, and I didn't follow it like I had been, so I really couldn't tell you today who's who. It just was one of those things where I quit doing it, and I support my friends, my Carolina friends, you know, the Hardys and Shane Helms and the group that came out of this great state. You know, we have a pretty rich tradition as far as WWE superstars, and proud to call they're a huge part of Chinlock for Chuck. But when they signed on and everything, I just kind of been my sickness. Unfortunately, my sickness came in 2006, and I was more or less supporting those guys. I wasn't keeping up with everything like I used to. But you know, I had more concerns about, you know, getting healthy and being able to beat this cancer, so a lot of my focus went away from wrestling, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely, it does. Well, we're down to the last few moments of the show today, so I want to give the last few minutes to you. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, if you have anything you want to plug and promote at all whatsoever, floor is all yours.
Number one, you know, what I mentioned earlier, Omega Championship Wrestling out of North Carolina is an awesome, awesome group of guys. Like I said, the Hardy Boys, that was their baby back in the early 90s. And when they signed with WWF at the time, it kind of fell to the wayside. And Chinlock for Chuck was kind of the rebirth. So all their shows are outstanding. Shane is working for TNA now, so he's not as active at the moment as he was, because he's got a busy schedule, but they're every show that they're coming, most of the shows now are on the East Coast, but I strongly recommend any Omega shows. That those guys are awesome, the whole group. And other than that, I just, you know, my wrestling is a dream of mine. 20 years, 1987 to 2006, 19 active years, I guess. Well, counting the stuff we did in college, I guess it was 20 years, because we started in 86. And it was a great run. I considered getting back into it when I got well the first time, but I just don't have it no more. My conditioning, my training, everything is just kind of my like I was saying, my main focus was
going towards beating cancer. And but I just want to say that the 20 years that I did do it, I enjoyed it. I've got so many more people that I've been in the ring with and wrestled and had the honor of just stepping in the ring with. Then I'm just going to – I'll give you some names. If you want to hear more, I can tell you, you know, with Andre Haku, back then I wrestled the Bolsheviks. I wrestled the Boss Man and the King, Bad News Brown. And then the WCW days, I wrestled Sting. Sting four different times during the Black Scorpion era, Ricky Steamboat, in the NAWA, Lex Luger, you know those. And a lot of the matches are on YouTube. I was even there when they did the Van Hammers and the Allen Iron Eagles, the PN News, when Jim Herd came up with some of those ideas. So I lost to just about everybody from Andre to Van Hammer. But anyway, all those years were great. They were fun. And I just I cherish the moments and the time. I'm glad I can still say that you know, my wrestling career was I'd say pretty positive. You know, my ultimate goal was to make the big money and make the big, you know, top of the line, be a superstar. And it wasn't meant to be, but the time I did spend in that ring, I just enjoyed every bit of it. I love performing. I love getting out there and doing my thing, and it's just something I don't regret it. I look back and I don't regret it at all. But those days are over. You know, they say you hung up the boots. So yes, I have. I've done one benefit since I was sick the first time, and I was I wrestled Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I was a Rush. I did a Russian Assassin, so that went well. But I said after that, I said I'm done. I can't do it anymore. But it was a fun run, and I'm glad you guys contacted me and let me talk a little bit about, you know, the good old days, I guess you could say, and share my story. And you know, I'm just thankful to be here. And I'll end by saying that I'm an avid, very proud Christian, and I owe everything that I have to the Lord. I wouldn't be here today without Him, and I'm just proud to say that. And I'm just glad to be alive. I'm 49 years old and beat cancer 3 times. A lot of people can't say it, but like I said when I started, by the grace of God, I'm still here, and I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful that, you know, guys like you are keeping wrestling, the independent wrestling scene, real, keeping it alive, and doing your part, helping these guys succeed, because there's so many promotions. And just that, you know, when you plug in the shows, that helps get the word out. And I respect you guys for doing that. And it means a lot. Like I was asked a while ago, if we had the access to what we have back then, we'd have had so much. I mean, it'd been so much more effective. And we did well at times. Sometimes we didn't. But, you know, the shows were it was word of mouth or posters on telephone poles. I mean, and that's the way we did it. But today, man, what I would give to be able to do it again and have the people like you who push these shows and tell people about and get the word out, and, you know, with Facebook and the Instagrams and all that, it would just be so much different, and helps everybody. Because, you know, I love the business. I love wrestling. I've always loved it. And, I mean, I don't watch it today as much. I try to watch Impact because Shane's involved, and Matt and Jeff. I keep up, like I said earlier, I keep up with my hometown guys, you know, and I'm their biggest fans. But I'm just glad you guys are keeping it real and keeping it alive for everybody else. A lot of young guys are coming up now, and I remember when I was in that same position, you know, and there's a lot of great talent out there. And so, you know, that's pretty neat what you guys are doing, and the show itself, and just keeping wrestling, you know, in perspective and keeping things, trying to help out people. You know, inevitably we're in this thing together, and the wrestling business is what it is because people, you know, get there and perform and try to do their best and every night, every weekend, whatever you're doing. And so I respect that. I miss it, but I'm thankful I get to talk about it, and appreciate you guys contacting me and talk a little bit about it, because it's good to reminisce and look back. And so with that, I'll end. But I do appreciate everything you guys do.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you very much for being on our show. It was a pleasure to have you. I hope you have continued good health, and we'd love to have you back sometime.
Sounds good. Contact me anytime, and you know, later we can keep up with me. Feel free to anybody that wants to friend me on Facebook. It's Chuck Coates, and I live in North Carolina. And if you want to keep up with my story and talk wrestling or whatever, I've got opportunity to talk to a lot of people through instant message and be able to share and tell them they want to know stuff about. Well, kind of what we talked about tonight. You know, stories about wrestling and things that we've done. So, hit me up on Facebook if you see me, and feel free to shoot me a friend request or whatever. And I guess that's it. And once again, thanks so much, and I wish you all the best. And everybody listening, thanks for taking the time out this evening to check out my story, because I loved it. I enjoyed every minute of it, and I appreciate you all.
Thank you, Mr.
All right. Well, fans, if you've not done so yet, jump on YouTube, check out Chuck Coates. Lots of his matches on YouTube, Daily Motion, so do some research. Great talent. We look forward to the next time. We will be back with you on Sunday afternoon with Fred Avery, so it should be a great time, and we'll talk to you Sunday.